Hello, everyone. This is Bob Zeta, the amateur radio call sign is N1PLF, November 1, Bravo Lima Foxtrot. I'm reading for you today in digest format, CQ Magazine. CQ is published by CQ Communications Incorporated, 25 New Bridge Road, Hicksville, New York, 11801. This recording is a production of the Courage Handy Hemp System, 3915 Golden Valley Road, Golden Valley, Minnesota, 55422. It is for the use of eligible Handy Hemp members only. Any other use may violate copyright laws. Handy Hemp may be reached at area 763-520-0512 or at email address, lowercase, handyham@courage.org. Website, www.handyham.org. Let's begin today with some ham radio news. Baker Claiborne Adelstein, confirmed by Senate. Meredith Atwell Baker and Mignon Claiborne were confirmed by the U.S. Senate on July 24 as SEC commissioners. Claiborne is a Democrat, Baker a Republican. Their confirmations brings the FCC back to its full strength of five commissioners, along with Chairman Julius Grenikowski and Commissioners Michael Copps and Robert McDowell. On the same day, the Senate confirmed former FCC Commissioner Jonathan Edelstein as Administrator of the Rural Utilities Service in the United States Department of Agriculture. A major part of Edelstein's new job will be working with the FCC to expand the availability of broadband Internet service in rural areas. Ex-Ham Bolden confirmed as NASA Administrator. Former astronaut and former ham, Charles Bolden, XKE4IQB, is the new administrator of NASA. He began work July 17 after being confirmed by the U.S. Senate. A veteran of four trips into space, Bolden commanded the flight on which the Hubble Space Telescope was launched and the first joint U.S.-Russian space mission, a prelude to the regular pairings of astronauts and cosmonauts today aboard the International Space Station. Bolden is also a 34-year veteran of the United States Marine Corps, during which time he rose to the rank of Major General. The Senate also confirmed Lori Garver as a NASA Deputy Administrator. This is also Garver's second stint at NASA, having served as a special assistant to the NASA Administrator from 1996 through the year 2002. Here's a bit of interesting news for antenna buffs. MFJ buys Cushcraft amateur antenna line. MFJ Enterprises has purchased the Cushcraft amateur radio antenna product line from Laird Technologies, Cushcraft's parent company. In a news release, Mississippi-based MFJ said the antennas will continue to be manufactured in New Hampshire. For more details, see the What's New column elsewhere in this issue. In other industry news, the current edition of Passport to World Band Radio will be the final one. Publisher Larry Magnin says he will maintain the WorldScan database on the Passport website. He gave no reason for the decision to cease publication. Also, Radio Shack is dumping radio, at least from its name. The company announced in early August that it is contemporizing its brand by dropping radio, R-A-D-I-O, from its name and calling itself simply The Shack. FAR, F-A-R, awards more than $70,000 in scholarships. The Foundation for Amateur Radio has announced its scholarship winners for 2009. The foundation, which administers 55 different scholarships for a variety of amateur radio organizations, awarded a total of $74,500 in educational grants this year to young hams. The largest scholarship this year, the $2,500 Lawrence E. and Thelma J. Norrie Memorial Scholarship, went to Rebecca Rich Call, KB0VVT, of Raytown, Missouri. Rebecca is a junior at MIT, majoring in electrical engineering. A complete list of this year's FAR scholarship winners will be available in the November issue of World Radio Online and on the FAR website at www.amateurradio-far.org. Meanwhile, the OMIK Scholarship Fund, run by the OMIK Radio Association, presented a $1,000 award to Caitlin Gray of Wadsworth, Ohio. The grant pushed the organization's total scholarship gift since 1991 above the $100,000 mark. Here's a bit of news from the American Radio Relay League. ARRL briefs National Safety Council on radio versus cell phones. The National Safety Council, NSC, is, quoting, on a mission, close quote, to educate Americans about the relative crash risks associated with different types of driving distractions. Among the greatest risks, says the council, are talking and texting on cell phones while driving, and it is seeking a nationwide ban on them. The ARRL is trying to educate the council on the differences between cell phones and two-way radios. In a letter to NSC President Janet Frutscher, ARRL President Joel Harrison, W5ZN, explains that the major difference is that amateur radios and other two-way radios are simplex communication systems in which only one person talks at a time, and each person tends to do more listening than talking, and the microphone is put down in between transmissions. According to the ARRL letter, Harrison said, quoting, two-way radio operation has been going on for decades without highway safety being an issue. The fact that cell phones have come along does not change that. Close quote. Another little piece from ARRL. The league urges caution on 70-centimeter medical devices. The ARRL is calling on FCC to exercise an abundance of caution in response to a petition to allow the use of certain implanted medical devices that operate between 413 and 457 megahertz, a block of spectrum that includes the 70-centimeter amateur band. According to the ARRL letter, two of the four channels proposed for use by these devices, which claim to restore function to paralyzed limbs and organs, are within the 70-centimeter band. Hams occupy the band on a secondary basis, along with the Medical Data Radio Communication Service, under which these devices would operate. The League said in comments filed with the FCC that the wireless medical telemetry service, which does not share frequencies with the amateur service, would be more suitable for these devices. In addition, the ARRL urged the FCC not to permit the marketing of any devices that have not been tested in the presence of strong RF fields and that do not carry, quoting, very specific patient notifications, close quote, regarding use in the presence of RF fields on the devices, operating frequencies. AMSAT seeks relief on technology restrictions. AMSAT is asking the federal government to transfer jurisdiction over its activities in support of the International Phase 3E Amateur Satellite Project to the Commerce Department from the State Department. The lead organization on the P3E project is Germany's AMSAT group, AMSAT-DL, and the U.S. government had previously determined that AMSAT-NA's contribution to the project were prohibited under the International Traffic in Arms Regulations, ITAR, program administered by the State Department. AMSAT North America's involvement in the P3E project was suspended in 2006. In a recent filing with the State Department, AMSAT says that its status as a not-for-profit corporation, the fact that its activities have no military applications, and that everything it does is publicly available on the Internet, meant that it would be more appropriately regulated by the Commerce Department's less restrictive export administration regulations. At press time, there had been no response to the request by the State Department. Let's take a look now at Rich Mawson's Zero Bias CQ editorial. Rich's call is W2VU. He's editor of CQ Publications. Contesting in the DQ effect. There were a few tidbits of information hidden away last month in the 2008 CQ Worldwide DX Contest CW results and in the 2009 CQ Worldwide Rules. Since the single sideband weekend of the 2009 contest is this month, some of these tidbits are worthy of additional comment. Now, heading the good. The worldwide single operator low power winner in last year's EQ Worldwide CW competition was P4OQ, but before Oscar Quebec, operated by CQ Amateur Radio Hall of Famer Scott Redd, called K0DQ. Scott has recently retired for the second time from government service, first as a vice admiral and commander of the U.S. Navy's Fifth Fleet, and then as a civilian in several roles, culminating as director of the National Counterterrorism Center. Ham radio and contesting have always been close to his heart, and this win gives Scott the distinction of being possibly the only person ever to win all six major DX contests. Anyone who has ever had any dealings with Scott is impressed not only with his enormous record of accomplishment and his competitive spirit, but also with his immediately obvious code of personal integrity of the highest order. It is part and parcel of who he is and what he has done. It makes us proud to be associated with him, whether as friends, acquaintances, or simply fellow hams. Now, the bad. While K0DQ is a contester of the highest integrity, the letters DQ, Delta Quebec, in contesting circles usually are associated with shorthand for disqualify. About the most severe sanction that a contest sponsor can impose on a competitor. This year, the CQ Worldwide Contest Committee found it necessary to DQ several entrants in the 2008 competition. In the single sideband competition for altering time in the multi-single category, and in the CW competition for, quoting, log results deemed incompatible with category of entry, close quote. In other words, submitting a log in one category such as single op when the log made it obvious that the entrant had the help of some sort, either from another person or from an alerting system such as the DX cluster, that's a registered trademark, or CW skimmer, another registered trademark. Both of these may be used, but only in the assisted or multi-op categories. Understand that, quoting, DQing is a last resort. Someone who has simply misunderstood the rules has his or her entry reclassified into the proper category or is sent a friendly advisory letter which explains the rules as clearly as possible. If the problem recurs, then the log may be reclassified as a check log while committee members continue their persuasive efforts. The CQ Worldwide Rules. In parenthesis, in the September issue of CQ and online on our website and at cqww.com, close parenthesis, clearly spell out the criteria for disqualification as well as the consequences, suspension from award eligibility, check log status, and more. In addition, as of this year, the rules now specify that A competitor who wishes to be judged for a top score in their category must agree to a potential visitation at any time during the contest by an observer appointed by the CQWW Contest Committee. Failure of the entrant to respond to our correspondence or to allow an observer full access to the contest QTH may result in the competitor being removed from award eligibility for 3 years. In italics. This is an important note. Assigning an observer to a station does not, with emphasis, automatically imply that we think there has been illicit behavior by that entrant. Rather, it simply suggests that the station is a world-class contender, and we want to allay any questions other contestants might raise about the operation. In our ongoing efforts to protect the integrity of our contest, we will continue to do what is necessary to prevent cheaters from taking away other competitors' enjoyment and pride in a job well done, and a job done by the rules. After all, the only prizes in ham radio contests are plaques, certificates, and bragging rights. Any honest competitor can accept losing fair and square to someone else. After all, the tables may be turned the next year. But having a pride of accomplishment stolen hurts as much as it does to have something tangible taken from you. What we don't understand, and probably never will, is what pleasure there is in looking at a plaque on your wall that you know you haven't really earned. To us, it would be a reminder every time we looked at it that we weren't good enough to win it legitimately. Integrity, the true bottom line. With that, we hope you will participate in and enjoy this year's CQ Worldwide DX contest, even if your only competition is your own performance in prior year. According to NW7US, prospects for improved propagation on both CQ Worldwide weekends looks good as of mid-August. And, of course, the CQ Worldwide has a well-earned reputation for creating its own propagation. So get on the air and have fun. And the YHOTY. At this year's Huntsville Hamfest in Alabama, I had the privilege of presenting the 2009 Newsline Young Ham of the Year, Andrew Koenig, KE5GDB, with a certificate for a week at Space Camp, registered trademark, CQ's major contribution to the YHOTY program each year. I am pleased to report that Andrew will be an excellent representative for our hobby. I got to spend some time not only with Andrew and his dad, but with a couple of his friends, whom he met via ham radio, who traveled to Huntsville from upstate New York solely to share the occasion with him. Friends like that, folks, is what ham radio is all about. 73 W2 VU, Rich Mawson. Moving on now to Washington, readout by Frederick O'Meara, called W5YI. This piece is titled FCC to Develop a National Broadband Plan. Last month, we covered U.S. Senate confirmation of new FCC Chairman Julius Granikowski and the reconfirmation of existing Republican Commissioner Robert McDowell. An existing third commissioner, Michael Copps, did not require reconfirmation. With the minimum three seats filled, the FCC could now transact business. Commissioner Jonathan Adelstein left the FCC to await Senate confirmation of his appointment to head up the Agriculture Department's Rural Utilities Service. RUS provides programs to finance rural America's telecommunications infrastructure. Janikowski was sworn in on June 29 as the newest chairman of the Federal Communications Commission at 2:25 p.m. at the Supreme Court by Justice David Souter. Janikowski is a former clerk of Souter's. After his swearing in, Janikowski began installing his staff. He literally cleaned house, with most bureau and office heads being replaced. The new Wireless Telecommunications Bureau Chief is Ruth Milkman. Amateur radio falls under this bureau. A Harvard graduate, Milkman has served at the FCC in a variety of positions, including Deputy Chief of the International and Common Carrier Bureaus. Her most recent position was as an attorney and partner at a Washington, D.C. telecommunications law firm. Chairman Granikowski's first public FCC open meeting was held in early July. His opening remarks left little doubt about what the focus of his chairmanship would be, broadband regulation. Quoting, "Congress has entrusted the FCC with a matter of profound importance to the country," he said. "It is our job to develop a national broadband plan for America. We must find ways to ensure that all people of the United States have access to broadband." he added. I cannot imagine a more important set of tasks for this agency at this moment in history. He compared broadband deployment with other past networks that connect Americans, such as the railroad, telephone, and electricity, that serve as platforms for commerce and improve the quality of American lives. If we do our jobs right and ensure universal broadband that's fast, affordable, and open, we can unleash new waves of innovation that we can scarcely imagine today. We can accelerate economic growth, create jobs. We can unlock the power of spectrum to make America a world leader in mobile services and technologies. We can connect small businesses so that they can compete everywhere, improve educational opportunities, help deliver better health care and cleaner energy at lower cost, and extend the benefits of broadband revolution to our police and firefighters who depend upon communications to protect their own safety and ours. Close quoting. Earlier this spring, the FCC invited comments from the public on the FCC's role in the broadband provisions of the stimulus legislation. That was GN docket number 09-40. Among other things, Congress directed the National Telecommunications and Information Administration to get together with the commission to come up with a definition of broadband and what constitutes unserved and underserved areas of the United States. NTIA is the president's principal advisor on telecommunications and information policy. On April 13, the American Radio Relay League submitted its comments. The league, like many others, said that defining broadband, quoting, is a critical determination that will inevitably determine the success or failure of the program, close quote. ARRL believes that, quoting again, the definition of broadband should include an absolute lower threshold, minimum bidirectional speed, and should not be a variable concept determined by technology, close quote. The ARRL pointed out that it participates in the Committee for Communications Policy of the Institute of Electrical and Electronic Engineers, USA, quoting again, which has engaged in considerable discussion of universal access to high-speed broadband networks, and in particular broadband definitions and target goals for broadband deployment, close quote. The league said it agrees with the IEEE position on broadband. The IEEE advocates the achievement of at least 20 megabytes per second, bidirectional speed with 90% availability within 5 years, and at least 100 Mbps bidirectional speed with availability to all businesses and households within 10 years. Expenditure of public funds should be limited to the technologies that can meet these goals, close quote. Continuing, the FCC should designate ample licensed and unlicensed spectrum bands, including unused portions of television bands, for high-speed wireless networks, ultimately aiming at success for all, the IEEE said. Best estimates are that the United States currently ranks 14th in broadband household penetration, 22nd in average price per connection, and 24th in average advertising download speed. Japan and Korea are the world leaders in low-cost, high-speed broadband access. In Japan, the typical internet speed is 8 to 50 megabytes per second, much faster than the United States. Typical cost is from $30 to $60 per month. Nearly half of all broadband connections in Japan and Korea are fast FTTH, fiber to the home, with one-third the U.S. population. Japan has more than twice as many homes connected to a fiber optic network. In Japan, the average fiber optic speed is up to 100 megabytes per second, with costs ranging from $25 to $56 per month. The Japanese government subsidizes the cost of FTTH by up to one-third. Verizon, the only large U.S. provider of fiber optic service, that's Fios, accounts for less than 4% of all broadband connections at a higher cost. Well, I think it's time to go to a slightly lighter piece here. It's called Magic in the Sky. The author is Jeff Reinhardt. Call Alpha Alpha 6 Juliet Romeo AA6JR. He titles this A Field Day Special Event Plus Some Unsung Heroes. Field Day 2009 found me with at least three other hams playing among the multitude of signals making their way across the sky. What made this a bit unusual is that I was traveling with three other family members, all hams, and about 150 others aboard a transcon flight from Atlanta to Los Angeles at about 37,000 feet. It was the first field day I had not actively participated in for over a decade, yet I took some pleasure in imagining the many signals flying all about me, perhaps some of them reflecting off the metal surfaces of the fuselage and wings as we provided a bit of reflector for the flyover states. I would have loved to be making some contacts with that lofty perch, but as we all know, transmissions from a commercial aircraft are not allowed activities for commercial airline passengers. Like many CQ readers, I have had a number of interesting field day experiences, spending a few transmitting from the beautiful Malibu shoreline. At least two were spent doing mobile operations due to travel obligations. One at a campsite where we were jolted awake a Sunday morning by a significant earthquake. And, of course, we've experienced our share of the usual field day accomplishments and clunkers that make for good storytelling when relaxing among friends. One such friend has a field day 2009 story that will be hard to top. Mark Moore, call N6MGM. Is known to many amateur radio operators because he works at one of the candy stores that sell ham gear. Mark's an interesting person on many levels, but on field day, one could say he truly made the commitment. This year, he took a brief break from the on-the-air activities and married Amanda Moore, E. Guthrie, K6MDY. Leanne Bisbee, a daughter, gave the bride away. Elena Bisbee, another daughter, gave away the groom. The best men were Leon Brown, KC6JAR, and Joe Matta. And just to be sure, everything was 5x9 with the big communicator in the sky and the state of California, the Reverend Lowell Mosteen, KG6AJF, conducted the ceremony. By the way, I'm told that after the ceremony, normal field day activities resume. Hey, folks, I don't make this stuff up. I'm just a reporter. I wonder if the ARRL awards any bonus points on field day scores for getting hits during contest hours. Congratulations to Mark and Amanda, who during field day weekend changed their greetings from one another from 73 to 88. Here's a double take. Speaking of flying, I received a cute birthday card from the thoughtful folks at Southwest Airlines. At first, I thought they were prying into my profile as a ham. The front of the card read, Hotel Alpha Papa Papa Yankee Bravo India Romeo Tango Hotel Delta Alpha Yankee. Very clever, even if they had to swallow hard with that Delta in there. Along with everyone else, I was recently asked my opinion about the national coverage plan. My response was that it's probably a good thing for those out-of-production radios, in that parts and service are probably getting more difficult to find. I'm not quite sure how other radio brands might fare, with perhaps the exception of some private party stepping up with a health kit for my heat kit, which goes back many moons. To get serious for a few moments, let's devote some kind thoughts to talented people who share ham radio as a pastime and mix it with their profession, which is law, At a recent HamFest held at the Southwestern Division Convention in Santa Barbara, California, I attended a forum conducted by Chris Imlay, W3DK, who acts as the AARL's General Counsel. Whether or not you're a League member, you benefit from his work and from the labors of the many volunteer councils who donate their services to protect our ability to operate. This point was driven home through a case now being handled by Volunteer Counsel Leonard, or Lenny Schaefer, WA6QHD, which could have far-reaching implications for hams in California, the most populous state for licensees, with possible spillover effects for other states as well. Like many lost stories, the case revolves around a complex set of issues, but to be brief, it centers on actions taken by the city of Palmdale, California, that first approved, then rescinded permission for a ham in that city to have an antenna structure. Len was instrumental in winning the first round of getting a judge to decide the case in favor of the ham. At the forum, we were informed that the city has appealed, but the lookout is cautiously optimistic for the decision to be upheld. Watch for updates on this important story. During the convention, Len was appropriately named the Southwest Division's Volunteer of the Year. General Counsel Imlay also shared the great detail that has been applied to the FCC's handling, or mishandling, of information pertaining to the implementation of Broadband Over Power Lines, BPL. Unlike the television shows Boston Legal, Perry Mason, and Law and Order, lawyering is not always fun. Quite the opposite. It can be mind-numbing and tedious. It requires sharp attention to just about every word, phrase, many in Latin, and punctuation mark, and the arcane rules pertaining to filing, sharing information, and the like. Chris reported that technical information withheld by the FCC would have likely resulted in that agency coming to a different approach in its handling of BPL regulatory issues. He said additional developments will unfold on this ongoing story. The implementation of BPL in certain locations brought with it interference on several bands, prominent among them HF frequencies. Whereas, to use a law term, we hams are governed and regulated by a federal agency. It makes sense to me that amateur radio needs top-notch legal talent to make sure that rules, regulations, and other actions are conducted fairly. However, talent costs money, and most law firms are not low-priced nor charitable operations. They have expenses, too. It was gratifying to hear that Len received financial support from several clubs. Even with this volunteerism, there are hard costs for filing, reports, expenses incurred in depositions, and the like. While there's no end to lawyer jokes or anecdotes, every now and then everyone needs good legal help. Send some good thoughts, or, if you can, some support their way. At a future club meeting, consider asking one of your local volunteer councils to make a presentation on his or her efforts to help us all keep the ability to enjoy the magic in the sky. 73, Jeff, AA6, JR. You know, folks, this is Bob, your reader in when BLF. I see here a little reminder from the CQ Publications folks, and I think it's fair to give this a comment. Finding World Radio online. I said it right, World Radio online. To access the current issue of World Radio Online, as well as past online issues, helpful downloading tips, and other information, you'll need to go to the World Radio Welcome page on the CQ website. Here's how to do it. 1. Go to the CQ homepage at www.cq-amateur-radio.com. 2. Find the World Radio Online logo at the left of the CQ magazine covers. Click on it. This will take you to the WRO welcome page, where you will have several options. There are links to a variety of informational pages. We recommend that you read the viewing and downloading tips before doing anything else. The back issues link will take you to previous issues beginning February 09 to download and view. Apparently a lot of folks who enjoyed for many years World Radio in print form have sort of lost it by several reasons, perhaps one of which maybe they don't have internet connection. That could be a big one, I suppose. If you can't get there, you won't be able to read World Radio online. But if you are one of those that sort of wondered what happened to it and didn't realize there was a major change, you really should look at that website on the CQ website about World Radio and the beautiful work that they have done with the entire publication, which is now in full glowing color, among other things. I just thought it was important to give a little help to them in letting more people know about World Radio being still available in the online format. You might recall a few moments ago when we began to broadcast for the October 2009 issue of CQ Magazine here on the Courage Handy Ham System. As part of the news, there was an announcement that MFJ purchases Cushcraft Amateur Radio Antennas product line. Let's expand upon that just a bit. MFJ Enterprises Incorporated, Starkville, Mississippi, has purchased Cushcraft Amateur Radio Antenna product line from Laird Technologies, St. Louis, Missouri, effective July 31, 2009. Cushcraft Amateur Radio Antenna products will continue to be manufactured in Manchester, New Hampshire. Just as an aside, folks, I'm getting to be an old buzzard. I turned 78 just last Sunday. And when I was in the Korean War, I didn't quite see bullets flying, but I saw a lot of other things when I was stationed at Grenier Air Force Base in Manchester, New Hampshire. And this MFJ Cushcraft company, Cushcraft, was actually located on what was the field for Grenier Air Force Base during the Korean War. Just an aside with a personal touch of fondness for Cushcraft. They make wonderful products. Let's continue with the piece. We are excited to have the Cushcraft Amateur Radio and Antenna product line alongside our other five companies, said Martin F. Jue, spelled J-U-E, president and founder of MFJ Enterprises Incorporated, quoting, "This product line increases our ability to offer our customers a wide range of antenna options at different prices. Customers will be able to choose from Cushcraft amateur radio antennas, high gain, and MFJ antennas through one source. MFJ purchased high gain in the year 2000. Cushcraft amateur radio antennas will bring over 50 new products to MFJ's impressive amateur radio product line. Cushcraft amateur radio antenna products have long been a popular source for a wide range of HF, VHF, UHF vertical, beam, and Yagi antennas for the amateur radio community. We will add more new products to this antenna line. We'll continue the Cushcraft amateur radio antenna name long into the future. Cushcraft amateur radio antenna product customers will appreciate continued and expected top quality manufacturing of this product in New Hampshire and the MFJ commitment to superb after the sales service and tech support in Mississippi," said Jew. A special customer service line has been set up in Starkville, Mississippi. The telephone number is as follows: area 662-323-5803. This line will handle any Cushcraft amateur radio antenna product technical support, parts requests, and customer service. To order, get a free catalog, or for your nearest dealer, call 1-662-323-5953, or go to http://www.cushcraftamateur.com. So basically, it's www.cushcraftamateur.com. Cushcraft Amateur, one word. So, there you have it. Time marches on, doesn't it, huh? I don't often speak about awards, but there is an article here by Ted Milanowski. His call K1BV, Kilo 1, Bravo Victor, titled Antarctica, awards. Contacting stations operating from the hostile environment of Antarctica has held a fascination for amateurs for a long time. It really has. Great and deserved bragging rights follow automatically. Yeah, I had a great QSO at Little America last night, and would you believe the temperature down there was 82 below zero? No country may own any of the territory known as Antarctica. Scientific studies are the main business there, and amateur radio is often used as a link back to the home countries of the researchers, as well as a morale builder. Over the years, a number of interesting awards have been developed for contacts with Antarctica stations. As we move into winter in the Northern Hemisphere, the stations in Antarctica look forward to their summer, such as it is. The first of the awards is sponsored by the Wireless Institute of Australia. It's pictured here. It's very beautiful. You would contact 10 stations operating from Antarctica, including stations authorized by at least 6 different national licensing authorities, one of which must be a Victor Kilo Zero, VK0 prefix, to earn the WIA Antarctic Award. Contacts after February 23, 1988, the 75th anniversary of the first two-way radio contact between Antarctica and the outside world, count for the award. Antarctica is defined as the landmass, islands, and permanent ice shelf below 60 degrees south latitude. This excludes Heard, McDonald, and Macquarie Islands, which are sub-Antarctic. Shortwave listening, okay. All bands, okay. No crossband. For foreign applicants, the fee is $25. U.S. $25. I guess the first one is probably Australian. Or 13 IRCs. Applications should be sent to the WIA Awards Manager, Michael Wright, W-R-I-G-H-T. Michael's call is Victor Kilo 5, Alpha Romeo Delta, VK5ARD, P.O. Box 752, Roxby Downs. I'll give you Roxby. It's R-O-X-B-Y, Roxby Downs, South Australia, 5725, Australia. Argentina's Antarctic Award follows. Argentina has had a close relationship with the Antarctic continent, plus bases on the very rare South Georgia, South Orkney, South Sandwich, and South Shetland Islands. The islands are claimed as overseas territories of the United Kingdom, and are claimed by Argentina as well. However, other than scientists there on a temporary basis, the islands are uninhabited. There are two Antarctic awards that come from Argentina. Now, the first one, Certificado Artico Argentino, CAA. The first of the two Argentine Antarctic awards comes from the country's national organization, the Radio Club of Argentino. Contact any single UL Lima uniform station, ULs need three, located in the Antarctic area on or after November 20, 1945. That's quite a spread of time, huh? The first letter of their suffix is Z for Zulu. The example, L-U-1-Z-A. This is an example of their call, London Uniform 2 Lima Alpha. Separate certificates are issued for phone or ZW, Morse code. The award fee for LU stations is in U.S. dollars 5 or 10 IRCs. Endorsements are U.S. dollars 2 or 4 IRCs. The fee for all others is U.S. 8 or 16 IRCs and U.S. 3 or 5 IRCs for endorsements. Shortwave listening, okay. Apply to Award Manager, Radio Club of Argentina, Casilla de Correros, 97-1000-Correro Central, Buenos Aires, Republic Argentina. The other one is the Worked Argentine Antarctic Bases, WAAB. The second Argentine Antarctic Award is sponsored by the Radio Club Rio de la Plata. Confirm contacts with stations located on at least three different Argentine Antarctic bases since November 9, 2001. Shortwave listeners also. All bands from 2 meters to 160 meters, and mode single sideband CW, RTTY, and digital are accepted for the award. If you want more information on that one, it's on page 97 of the CQ for October 2009. The lettering and the wording gets a little complicated, folks, and I'm really not that good at Spanish to begin with. You might have already noticed. But at any rate, it's always great to talk about Antarctic. You know, as an aside, again, I don't give too many asides when I do these digest recordings, because the work here is really being done to pleasurize you, hopefully. From me, a sort of a thank you, giving back my talents, if that's what one wants to call them. And to just hear this material, most especially if you may be in some way or other print or visually impaired. I do remember one thing. Way back about 20-some years ago, I was running a Drake Sea Line then, and I think I had an Alpha 76A out there pushing a little bit too, and all of a sudden I came up on Antarctic. I don't remember the call. It was an American, apparently, because his English was beautifully, better English than mine. But at any rate, I cannot believe I still remember to this day. Here I am sitting at 5:30 in the morning on the September 29th, 2009, and about 25 years ago, I'm at my radio, and all of a sudden I hear this absolutely crystal clear 5-9 plus 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 signal. I don't know if the 20 pluses or more were showing it, but the audio was absolutely spotless. I actually talked with this fellow for over a half hour. No one tried to break in. Maybe they just weren't hearing us. We must have had a pipeline to the bottom of the world, but it was fun. So that's one of my rather infrequent reminiscences about ham radio contacting. I hope you indulge me now just a little bit, and I thank you for it. There are several other country awards as well, the Russian Antarctic Bases Award and so forth. A lot of technical detail, or more or less information about payment and such, with many of you might fall asleep if I kept talking that way. So if you're interested and you need some help, get someone to check out that October 2009 CQ magazine on the newsstands now. You know, that's another interesting thing about CQ, for what it's worth. Here on the Courage Hanahan system, Pat Tice, the director, and I decided to read these digest form recordings for people who perhaps cannot read them for themselves. That goes back perhaps a year now. And in that period of time, we've come to realize that although we, as Courage Antihemp System, like to get the information to the listeners and to the members of the Handy Hemp System somewhere in a range of the middle of the previous month, which is possible with QST usually, and also with World Radio when it was in print, it doesn't seem to be easy to do with CQ Magazine. For some reason or other, the CQ Publications Company does not actually make their magazine come through my mailbox or anybody else's, I don't think, even through the stores, much before about the 28th or 9th of any given month. I just got this magazine yesterday, which was the 28th of September. So that's the reason you usually don't hear it along with the other two publications that Pat Tice makes available quickly for the membership of the Courage Handy Hemp System. It just isn't ready for us to read it yet. I hope you understand. I think it's time and appropriate for us to talk about a little bit of propagation in the airwaves about now. There's a piece here by Thomas Hood called NW7US, November Whiskey 7, United Sierra. It says, good conditions predicted for CQ Worldwide DX Single Sideband Contest. That's the biggie of the year. High-frequency radio enthusiasts celebrate the arrival of the fall and winter DX season. From October through November 2009, we will see a steady improvement in the DX bands. During the CQ Worldwide DX Contest taking place in both months, we should experience fairly good success. The 2009 CQ Worldwide Single Sideband Contest will start at 0 UTC, Universal Time Constant, Saturday, October 24, and run through 2359 UTC the next day, Sunday, October 25. Looking at the 27-day rotation of the sun, taking into consideration the current solar activity at the time of writing of this column, propagation may be good on both days. Expect conditions to be comparable to conditions in the 2008 contest weekend. I don't know if they were that good. Let's hope they're better. Prediction for one 27-day rotational period are far more accurate than for three 27-day rotational periods. Be sure to carefully check conditions on September 28 and 29, since this would be one rotational period before the single sideband contest weekend. There is better than a 90% chance that conditions observed on those days, that's September 28 and 29, oh, that's yesterday and today, I should run out and observe, huh? will occur during October's contest weekend. If I look at all the rest of the information in this article, which is really very well put together, there are a lot of plus features for radio broadcasting coming up with the new solar cycle, which we've been all waiting and waiting and waiting, waiting for. Mother Nature and the solar sun are beginning to perk up, so you should as well. Tying that piece up, there's a little profile here. It's headed Hathaway Reassuring, Pessimistic, at Huntsville. NASA's point man on solar cycles and space weather says we are definitely not heading into another maunder minimum, but continues to predict a weak solar cycle 24. Speaking to hams at the 2009 Huntsville, Alabama Hamfest on August 16th, Dr. David Hathaway, Solar Physics Group Leader at the Marshall Space Flight Center, said we are definitely into cycle 24 and believes that the official date of the solar minimum will be pegged at November 2008. This despite the unprecedented six-month sunspot hiatus at the start of 2009, and a complete lack of sunspots through most of the summer. Hathaway said several aspects of the current cycle do not match up with any others on record and thus make predictions difficult. He said the strength of the polar magnetic fields at the current minimum are about half those of the previous three cycles, despite indications beginning in 2003 that those fields would be very strong. A quotation, exactly the opposite of what was predicted, is happening, he said. However, he was reassuring that we are not headed into another extended period of very low solar activity, such as the Maunder minimum of several centuries ago. Well, we won't have to be here to compare that, I guess, huh? There have been more sunspot regions seen since January 2009 than in the first 20 years of the Maunder minimum, he noted, despite the fact that very few sunspot regions have been seen in that period. Hathaway spent much of the session explaining the solar dynamo theory by Dr. Morsimi Dipakpaki of the National Center of Atmospheric Research in Boulder, Colorado, a theory that is now generally accepted as currently explaining the movement of solar materials and magnetic fields on the sun and their relationship to sunspot cycles. As for the future of cycle 24, Hathaway said all indications except one are that the cycle will be weak and short. Well, anyway, he is predicting the solar maximum at 85 plus minus 25 in 2010, although others are predicting a longer cycle. The one indication that does not agree with the others, he noted, is Dr. Dipakpaki's flux transport dynamo prediction, the theory on which everything is now based. And, Hathaway says, Dipakpaki is sticking with her prediction of a huge cycle. He added, I have job security. We don't understand this thing. Bottom line for us hams, despite the generally gloomy predictions, there is still hope. That reflection was supplied by W2VU, Rich Mawson, the editor of the magazine. Thank you, Rich. Well, what do you say we check out some CUSO parties? Iowa. The first Iowa CUSO party will be held on October 17 from 1400 to 2300 Zulu. Sponsoring the event is the Ottumwa Amateur Radio Club and working its call sign, WA0DX, will earn a 100-point bonus. Special multipliers will be earned for working the three present or past section managers who live in the state, SM1, SM2, and SM3. Prizes and certificates will be supplied by the radio sponsoring organization. In the great state of New York, NYPQ, this event, sponsored by the Rochester DX Association, will be held from 1800 Zulu October 17 through 0600 Zulu October 18. The object is for stations outside of New York State to work as many New York stations in as many New York counties as possible. Most of the big popular band options, single sideband, CW, RTTY, and other digital modes available. Arizona, the CUSO party there is sponsored by the ARRL Arizona section and Catalina Radio Club. The event will be held from 1600 Zulu October 10 to 0600 Zulu October 11. And also 1400 to 2359 Zulu October 11, phone, CW, and digital modes on 160, 80, 40, 20, 15, 10, 6, and 2. You get the idea about CUSO parties. That's like going to lawn sales, isn't it? Huh? Sometimes. The magazine this month is also publishing some special events scheduled for October. First one is called K3R, Kilo 3 Romeo, from Public Demonstration of Amateur Radio and Emergency Preparedness, Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, Rotarians of Amateur Radio. It'll be in all the major frequencies that people look for these kinds of things, so listen for K3R. Also, N7V, November 7 Victor, from Nevada Day, Las Vegas, Nevada, Las Vegas Radio Amateur Club, October 30th. Special call W9M, Whiskey 9 Mike, from a commemoration of the 30th anniversary of the Metro DX Club, Oak Lawn, Illinois. 1500-2359 Zulu, October 3, on 7.240, 14.040, and 14.240 megahertz. And one more, W0CWP, Whiskey Zero, Charlie Whiskey Papa, from the 21st annual Anamosa Pumpkin Fest, Anamosa, Iowa, Jones County Amateur Radio Club, October 3rd. Listen for them, too, and see if you can carve up a few pumpkins by way of airwaves. And I'll finish up with a few Oktoberfests. Well, Hamfest in October. October 4th, 25th Annual Southeast Iowa Hamfest, Muscatine County Fairgrounds, West Liberty, Iowa. On October 11th, Maysville Hamfest, Community Center, Maysville, North Carolina. Again, October 11th, Hall of Science Amateur Radio Club Hamfest, New York City, Hall of Science Parking Lot, Flushing Meadow, Corona Park, Queens, New York. October 18, R.F. Hill, ARC Hamfest, Sellersville Firehouse, Sellersville, Pennsylvania. Well, folks, it's time to run. I'm at the 58th, the minute in the hour. My voice is dying anyway. You might have noticed the last 4 or 5 minutes. This is Bob Zeta. My amateur radio call sign is N1BLF. My QTH is geographically located in Dartmouth, Massachusetts, right next to New Bedford, the largest dollar value fishing port in America, right on the way to good old Buzzards Bay. Well, for some of you on the way back from good old Buzzards Bay, I guess summer's gone. This recording is of CQ Magazine in digest format for October 2009. CQ is published by CQ Communications Incorporated. Their address is 25 New Bridge Road, Hicksville, H-I-C-K-S-V-I-L-L-E, New York, 11801. This recording is a production of the Courage Annie Hemp System, 3915 Golden Valley Road, Golden Valley, Minnesota, 55422. It's for the use of eligible Handy Ham members only. Any of the views may violate copyright laws. Handy Hams may reach at area 763-520-0512 or at email address lowercase handyham, that's one word, H-A-N-D-I-H-A-M, handyham@courage.org. Our website, a very fine one indeed, www.handyham.org. I thank you for listening. I've been a little loosey-goosey this particular recording. No particular reason. I'm stone sober, except I'm enjoying myself. My voice sounds a little better than it often does. So I thank you for putting up with me again. N1BLF 73 from Massachusetts. Bye-bye.